Who's that coming down the street? Who's that coming to meet me? Is that too hexy, mamas?
Yeah, that was
Shut good. Up, that was so good.
Let me get these out of y'all's way.
I spit in mine.
Good.
I'm totally joking. Spitting is foul. Delilah spit one things. Time and I was like, ugh. She goes, I had something gross in my mouth. And I said, you don't spit. Spitting is foul.
Of all the things that are foul for you.
I just hate when people spit.
I don't like it either. I'm just saying it's funny.
Or when someone's like, my significant other spit in my face. I'm like, oof. Immediately.
That makes me want to throw up, truly.
Yeah. How, like, and just so disgraceful. Disrespectful.
That's, yeah, so that's the ultimate disrespect. Being spit on.
Not cheating on someone else, but you spit on me.
Listen. I have a very specific set of rules in my house. Cheat on me all you want, but don't you dare spit in my face.
People are driving me insane about the weather.
Oh, but rescheduling shit?
Yeah.
Why are they freaking out? It's Tennessee. Wait an hour and it will change, so don't worry about rescheduling your shit now.
Honestly.
I'll be shocked if it snows Thursday. I'll be very happy because Dylan gets paid days off.
What? I don't get this.
It's
it's so funny. I don't get it.
Okay, because the joke is that that people believe Ted Cruz is the
Zodiac killer.
The Zodiac killer. Those are the Zodiac killer's victims. At the very bottom is Beto O'Rourke, which is the man he just beat in the elections.
That's so childish.
I saw it the other day and I thought it was hilarious. I'm the one that posted it. Okay, welcome to Two Hexy Mamas. I am Karina.
And I'm Jessica.
And we are a spooky podcast run by two moms. And today we are going to talk about Thanksgiving murders. This subject was suggested by a person on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We put out a thing that was like, hey, give us topics. And if we use your topic, we'll send you a little something special. So I will contact you. But her username is the Mickey Corgi. She comments on a lot of stuff. It's super cute. But
which, can I say, I didn't even think, like, Thanksgiving murders.
Never would have crossed my mind.
Yeah, because I think, because when we associate Thanksgiving, we're like, oh, happy family.
Not me, I hate Thanksgiving.
But when most people, I guess.
I fucking hate Thanksgiving, so I can understand this.
Yeah.
On a spiritual level. But before we do that, let us read another review. We try to, don't fucking touch my feet.
That's what I want for my Christmas present. I want Karina to hold toes.
Well, that would have saved me some money. I still would not do it. Anyway, we like to read people's reviews as a thank you for being so kind or just leaving a review. Because sometimes they're not so kind. But this one is.
I think we've only had one bad review.
So far, yeah. Which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Love the podcast. You girls had me busting up on my car ride home. And there's some emojis. And that's from Britna. That's the username. So thank you, Britna, for your review. I really appreciate it. And are you ready to do Thanksgiving murders?
So my Thanksgiving murder, I feel like, you probably have heard about it, because it wasn't, like, recent, but it's been, like,
yeah,
in the news. Does this name ring a bell? The Byron David Smith killings.
It only does because I was Googling it, but I didn't read anything about it, so no, it doesn't ring a bell to me, so I know nothing about this. Wait, is this the one that's in Knoxville?
No.
No, okay, then I don't know anything.
Knoxville?
There was apparently, when I was Googling, because apparently this is a common thing. Like, it was not hard to find something.
Yeah.
But apparently there was one in Knoxville, which is only, like, what?
A few hours.
4 hours from here? But anyway, so go ahead. So I don't know anything about this one.
The hiccups. This is going to be awkward. There wasn't much banter going on.
Because you were too busy typing to people that you're mad at.
Okay.
I got straight to it.
The Byron David Smith killings occurred on Thanksgiving Day of 2012 when Hallie Kiefer, I think that's how you pronounce this.
Who knows?
18, and her cousin Nicholas Brady, 17, broke into the home of Byron David Smith, who was 64 at the time, in Little Falls, Minnesota in the United States.
Smith, armed with a Ruger Mini 14, shot the teens separately and minutes apart as they entered the basement where he was.
Oh, he shot them?
They were trying to rob his house. Oh. So this is going to start like a very like, huh, oh, but uh-huh. kind of thing, which I think is really interesting. Sad, very sad, but kind of like,
yeah. Eh.
But anyways, shot the teen separately and minutes apart as they entered the basement where he was, later stating to police he was worried about them being armed. The case sparked debate over the Castle Doctrine, which allows a homeowner to defend mm-hmm. his home with lethal force, but there are so many things that go into this, like...
It's, like, one of the things
if they turn away from mm-hmm. you, you are
If no they longer... turn away from you, they've considered disengaged.
Uh-huh.
It's funny is my dad even said it to me, because he told me, like, because... I am a gun owner.
You're supposed to shoot to wound, not shoot to kill.
Well, in this instance, correct. Not in a lot of other instances. Like, right. Law enforcement is not taught to do that. But what I'm saying is... I think
in Tennessee, that's also
Well, and law. Depending on the law... Like, my dad even said it. If someone gets injured breaking into your home, they have more rights than you do. Like, if a man were to break into this home tonight and on his way out... cut his leg on my window, he could sue me.
I think I heard of a case like that, like a guy mm-hmm. was breaking in through like what are those things called, a sunroof or something uh-huh. under their kitchen and landed on a knife or something and sued the family. Mm-hmm.
It's I'm sure that varies like state by
which
state.
Which is absolutely fucking absurd because you are breaking and
but
entering.
In Florida the law is
Minnesota.
Or, no, but I'm saying it's a similar law.
Oh, you're pointing at my phone. I'm like, sorry, this did not happen in Florida.
It's a similar law where it's basically like your home, your castle, defend it.
Right. But so, there are certain stipulations.
There are.
Like
if you turning your back.
If I shoot you in your kneecap and you're wounded and you're clearly not going to get up, I can't then
shoot
go,
you again.
I can't then go, I'm going to shoot you in your head because I'm afraid you're going to kill me.
No, kind it of thing. Happen,
you
yeah.
can get in trouble for
also,
that.
Also, if they turn their back on you, you can't shoot their back right. because they right. considered that they're leaving, mm-hmm. which is, yeah.
So, the case sparked debate over the Castle Doctrine, which allows a homeowner to defend his home with lethal force. The prosecution alleged that Smith's actions, which we'll go into because they're pretty like...
shady.
The prosecution alleged that Smith's actions showed aspects of premeditation.
Oh.
Like lying in wait. He waited for them to come in.
Does he know them?
I think they had robbed him before. And so he got to us. I'll just go into
okay.
it. And he used excessive force in relation to the threat. He was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. Smith, 64, was retired from the U.S. State Department and had a history of international travel to Moscow, Bangkok, and Beijing. His brother described him as a retired security engineering officer. Prior to the incident, Byron Smith had been burglarized at least half a dozen times over the preceding few months. So, that's, I mean,
okay, yeah.
within such a few months, I mean,
you're
can
probably
you imagine
so fed up. Like, you're like, I'm not gonna let this happen again.
Among the items stolen were thousands of dollars in cash, the watch his father had received after spending nearly a year as a prisoner of war in World War II, medals and ribbons Smith had earned in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, several firearms and jewelry. Smith began routinely wearing a holster with a loaded gun inside his home. There is some evidence that Kiefer and Brady committed at least a couple of the previous break-ins and were being investigated for prior burglaries, including one earlier on the day they were killed. Smith installed a security system to protect himself.
Mm.
So, at one, this is a very, like, I could see myself after somebody breaking in and stealing all of these really
being
important...
Fed up.
Honestly, right, being
yeah.
so fed up. And another part of me, like, the thing, like, I'll go into the incident, but another part of me is, like, some of this is really wrong.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because there are so many other outlets that he could have taken that he just didn't.
Mm.
On November 22nd, 2012, Thanksgiving, for those of you who don't know, Kiefer and Brady broke into Smith's home. Video surveillance captured the teens casing the property prior to the break-in. By his own account to police, Smith was in the basement when he shot Brady twice at the top of the basement stairs and once in the face fatally after he fell to the bottom of the stairs. Minutes later, when Kiefer entered the basement, he shot her at the top of the stairs. Wounded, she fell down the stairs, and after Smith's rifle jammed, he shot her multiple times in the chest with a .22 caliber
okay.
revolver, dragged her across the floor to set her beside the body of her cousin, and then shot her fatally under the chin.
Okay.
Audio and video of the events were recorded by Smith's security system.
Like, okay, hold on. If he shot her once and killed her, fine.
But
whatever. But he shot her again and
not
again
only,
and again.
Not only that, he shot her. She
moved
fell.
Her.
He shot her again, moved her, and then fatally
shot her.
Shot her.
Yeah, no, that's
right.
a little bit excessive.
The investigation. The
isn't
deaths
that called like dubious and habeas and something. Anyway, it's like when you overkill, it's called like habeas crimes or something like that.
I have no idea.
I have to look it up.
You're the murderer thingy.
I'm a murderer.
No,
you're the murderer.
You're more like into
I am more
all
of a
that
murderer
stuff.
Person.
The deaths were not immediately reported to the police.
Oh, dude.
Listen to this. Smith waited until the next day to notify police of the shootings, claiming he didn't want to bother the police on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Morrison County Sheriff Michael Wetzel had acknowledged that Brady and Kiefer were there to burglarize Smith's residence. Brady's sister claimed Brady stole drugs from her home August 28th in a case that was still under investigation. Evidence recovered from the car driven by Brady was linked to a burglary of the residence of a retired teacher the night before he and Kiefer were killed by Byron Smith. So I feel like these teens were just, they were just troublemakers.
They were
honestly.
Bad kids, but doesn't mean they,
that they deserve
exactly,
to die.
Exactly, yeah.
Smith's statements to police described delivering killing shots to the heads of both victims after he had shot them on the stairs and they had fallen to the basement floor wounded. In his statement, Smith said that Kiefer had let out a short laugh after she fell down the stairs, saying, "If you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again." The audio tape did not record Kiefer laughing. Instead, she cries, "Oh my God," in fear. In police interviews, Smith acknowledged,
"Why are you trying to lie when you have video cameras
maybe
in your
forgot.
Own home?
I don't know.
Did he forget?"
In police interviews, Smith acknowledged firing more shots than I needed to, and that he fired a good, clean, finishing shot into Kiefer's head.
Jesus.
Castle doctrine
he
debate.
He feels no bad.
Honestly, I don't think he does
feels
at all.
No bad feelings.
Legal analysis have stated that the initial shootings most likely would have been justified under the Minnesota laws, but that the subsequent shots were not justified once any threat had been removed. Sheriff Wetzel said that the law doesn't permit you to execute somebody once a threat is gone.
Yeah.
Hamline University School of Law professor Joseph Olson says, "I think the first shot is justified. After the person is no longer a threat because they're seriously wounded, the application of self-defense is over."
Mm-hmm.
A number of aspects of the case were noted by police as being inconsistent with self-defense. Smith moved his truck earlier in the day. He claimed it was in order to clean his garage. Prosecutors argued at his trial that it was an attempt to make the house look abandoned in order to lure the burglars inside the home.
Oh, shit.
In addition to his home surveillance system, Smith also recorded at least 6 hours of audio on a digital recorder in the basement of the residence. He was sitting in a chair at the bottom of the stairs with a loaded rifle and a tape recorder that captured not only the shootings, but also a monologue by Smith. Prior to the break-in, he is heard saying, "In your left eye," and, "I realize I don't have an appointment, but I would like to see one of the lawyers here." The prosecution noted that Kiefer was later shot in the left eye by Smith and alleged that the other statement is a rehearsal of what he would say after the shooting, an indication that he knew he would soon need an attorney.
Oh, shit.
Following the shooting, Smith captured a number of statements, including, "I am not a bleeding heart liberal. I felt like I was cleaning up a mess. Not like spilled food, not like vomit, not even like diarrhea. The worst mess possible, and I was stuck with it. In some tiny little respect. I was doing my civic duty. If the law enforcement system couldn't handle it, I had to do it. The law system couldn't handle her, and if it fell into my lap and she dropped her problem in my lap and she threw her own problem in my face, and I had to clean it up." Smith's recorded statements, the evidence indicating he had planned the shooting, along with the excessive number of shots fired, led to the charge of a second-degree murder. Smith was initially charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder. However, in April 2013, he was indicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder. Bail was later set at $50,000, which Smith posted.
Oh, shit.
Hamline Law Professor Emeritus?
Sure.
I don't know. Joseph Daly commented that the laws surrounding the case were dividing the Little Falls community. "In some states, somebody breaks into your home, you are allowed to shoot them dead, period," says Daly. He pointed out other states, such as Florida, have a stand your ground law. But
that's what it is.
But Minnesota,
Florida's stand your ground.
Mm-hmm, but Minnesota has what's known as a reasonable person doctrine. If a reasonable person would see if you are in fear of great bodily harm of death, that's our statute. That's our statute. I don't know. I can't read. It comes down to what a reasonable person see in the future for Mr. Smith, said Daly. On April 29th, 2014, Byron David Smith was found guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder with premeditation and on 2 counts of second-degree murder after 3 hours of jury deliberations, which is not a lot of time, honestly.
Mm-mm. Okay, hold on a second. Just for the, like, for people who are listening, the stand your ground law establishes a right by which a person may defend oneself or others against threats or perceived threats, even to the point of applying lethal force, regardless of whether safely retreating from the situation. So I guess that means you could shoot someone in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been, despite the whether safely retreating from the situation might have been possible. Which, so Florida's like, shoot him up.
You know, I was thinking when the whole Kirby thing was going on, when he was being
cited.
I wonder
what the law is in Tennessee.
It's not, you can't, if they run away, you can't shoot at them.
You
someone
looked it
was.
Up?
Huh?
Did you look it up?
I did. Well, oh, okay, yeah. I did. But someone, this was before I knew what the law was.
Uh-huh.
I always wondered, like, why are people telling them, even if he's trying to break in our home and if they run away, like, someone was like, why didn't somebody shoot him dead? And other people were like, you can't do that. And someone even said, like, if you did that and he got hurt, he could sue the state and never be locked up for what he's doing. I mean, it's just a big fucking mess.
It is. It's a whole mess, yeah.
He was immediately sentenced to life in prison without parole. The audio recordings were named by the jurors as the biggest influence on their decision. That was the most damning piece of evidence in my mind, Wes Hasselstad, one of 12 jurors, said following the trial. That audio recording of the actual killings and the audio recording of Mr. Smith's interview immediately after his arrest pretty much convinced me that we were dealing with a deranged individual.
Oh, shit.
And then it goes into the Minnesota state statute, which says reasonable force may be used upon or towards the person of another without the other's consent when the following circumstances exist or the actor reasonably believes them to exist. When used by any person in lawful possession of real or personal property, I think that means your car, too.
I would think so, yeah.
In resisting unlawful interference with such property, another state statute states, the intentional taking of the life of another is not authorized.
So their law is just that do what you gotta do, but don't kill him.
Well, it says, except when necessary in resisting or preventing an offense which the actor reasonably believes exposes the actor or another to great bodily harm or death, which wasn't the case
here. No, not at all.
Or preventing the commission of a felony in the actor's place of abode. According to another state statute in criminal trials, the court shall decide questions of law, except in cases of criminal defamation, and the jury shall decide questions of fact.
So basically, you can beat them up, you can shoot them in the leg, and if they happen to die because of those injuries, they'll figure it out, but you cannot shoot them to kill them.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I figured it. Girl. Yeah, no, he definitely.
And I remember hearing about this when it first happened.
I've never heard about that. I don't know
how
I have.
And it's such a, like, it's such a fucked up thing because you want to say, they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been
doing
what they're doing.
You're right, they shouldn't have.
But at the same time,
he shouldn't have done that.
He shouldn't have done that. So like, you can't say, oh, they deserved it.
Like I said, if he had shot her, both of them, and they had fallen down the stairs and died, okay, that he didn't
shoot. Died from the first initial wound.
Exactly. He tried to do what he had to do, whatever. And then you can argue, yeah, maybe he moved his car to look abandoned, but you can't really dictate that stuff. But it's like that stuff coupled with
All the other things.
All the other stuff. Like, he shot her, what, like 4 or 5 times?
It was a lot of times that he shot her.
That's a, mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus, that is unnecessary.
Extremely.
Mm-mm. Okay. And you'd like to think that if he had a firearm, he knew how to use it.
He was a war vet.
Right. So, then he knows how to shoot someone to injure them, and he knows how to shoot someone to kill them.
I think that's what helped the prosecution
kind of
decide what they decided on. Because he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, and he also knew that he didn't need to shoot her that many times.
He wanted to solve it. And I forget who he talked to, but he stated that he has to solve it. He has to fix it. He has to clean up the mess.
And I get that. Like, you're trying to, these kids are bad kids. Like, I'm not saying they're not bad kids.
You want to protect your stuff.
And I get that. But at the same time, shoot them in their legs so they can't move. And then send their asses to prison for
exactly.
The rest of their lives.
Right.
Okay. So who I did is a man named Christopher Gaddis. And I think I'm saying his last name right. And I just want to state that all the information I got came from various articles from the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Guess where mine came from.
Where? Wikipedia?
Yeah! That's my favorite.
That's where
site.
Majority of mine come from. But this one actually was very, there was actually not a lot on Wikipedia on this, but I got it from the Richmond Times, which it took place near Richmond, so it's like, I got first-hand accounts.
Is that Virginia?
Yes.
Okay.
So I got like first-hand accounts of this situation. So I'm going to tell you about Christopher Gaddis.
Tell me.
On November 21st...
That's not Thanksgiving.
It gets there. Gaddis and his wife, Jeanette, Had a confrontation over spilled wine when the family had gotten together.
Yes.
I know. To play a board game. Gaddis, who'd been drinking at the time, pushed in because he was mad at her for spilling the wine, pushed his wife and pulled his fist back like he was going to punch her before I think it was her nephew. I can't remember if it was her nephew or his nephew. I think it was her, so it was an adult nephew. Got in the middle of it and was like, hey, like, don't hit, like, what are you doing?
Were there more people around or just the three?
Yeah, it was the nephew. To my knowledge, it was the nephew, the husband, the wife, and then hit her daughter and her daughter's boyfriend.
Okay, so
all adults, though.
Plenty of witnesses.
Oh, plenty of people, yes. Previous to the crime that took place on Thanksgiving, there were reports that Gaddis had issues with his wife's children, his stepchildren, and didn't want them to stay in the house for more than a few days. Another reason why
I assume they are adults.
Oh yeah, all adults. Okay. And the reason why I say this is because at the time that the crimes were happening, his stepdaughter, Candace Kuntz, and her boyfriend, Andrew Boothorn, were both, they were both physical therapists. They were, like, contracted out physical therapists. So they kind of, like, went where they were contracted out. So they moved around a lot.
Right.
So they were in between jobs, and they were waiting to move to Arizona on a new assignment. But they had time between when one assignment ended and the other began.
Mm-hmm.
So they were staying at the home. At the time, I think they'd been staying there for a couple months at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't want them staying there at all,
right.
Let alone a couple months. On the same night of the argument, Jeanette came downstairs to give her and gave her adult nephew, the one who stopped the fight, her husband's gun, stating, "I'm scared he's going to use this." So the fight kind of boiled and boiled and boiled until it kind of spilled over on at 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving night. A home security camera recorded this whole crime, so it wasn't like he could not say he didn't do it. Gaddis confronted his stepdaughter and her boyfriend as they were relaxing in the hot tub. It was like after Thanksgiving, the meal, they were all just kind of relaxing, doing their thing. He confronted them. I think he was confronting them about, like, getting involved in the fight or about living there. I can't remember what it was. But he demanded that they leave. He was like, "I'm done with y'all. Get out of this house." But his wife intervened and was like, "No, that's my daughter. Like, she's staying here." She even started the confrontation got so intense that she started to record the confrontation on her phone.
Mm.
At about 11:15 at night, so just before Thanksgiving was over.
You.
I am 45 minutes left in Thanksgiving, guys.
Oh, my God.
Gaddis went upstairs, got his .45 caliber pistol, and three fully loaded magazines.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Went downstairs to his family, who were playing a board game at the kitchen. And think about that. It's Thanksgiving. You're tired. You finished eating. You're relaxing. You're just spending time with your family. They were literally sitting at the kitchen table playing a game.
Please don't tell me he killed all of those people.
Ooh, just wait.
Great.
He first shot his wife, then his stepdaughter, and then finally her boyfriend as he tried to run from the house. In killing the three, he emptied his magazine, firing almost 11 times. So it was way overkill. His wife's cell phone held a bounty of information against him at the court. Not just her phone, but her daughter's phone as well. Candace had been recording at the time of the attack.
What?
And even caught a brief image of Andrew crouched behind the table pleading, "I will go out, I will leave." And screams could be heard in the background.
So were they alive when she was recording?
I think she was recording. I don't know if she came. I don't know what made her start recording. I don't know if she was recording.
Maybe he came down and they saw?
I wonder if he came down, like, yelling. But regardless, she started recording before the shooting started happening.
Did they die?
Yeah. And the boyfriend was dead on the front lawn. So he killed him as he was, like, leaving the house, trying to run away. In court, only the judge was allowed to view the video because it was too graphic.
And how does that work? Is he not being tried by a jury?
But everything that happened could be heard by everybody. So
okay,
they
so
didn't make him.
Just,
yeah, I think it was just a lot of people in the courtroom were family members, and I just think he decided it was too much for them to see. Which I'm like, I can give him credit on that one.
But also, what if it swayed the jury to just not?
Definitely not. you'll see, he didn't try hiding what he did. Mm. He tried...
So what did he plead? Not guilty?
Just wait. So the attorney claimed that Gaddis had bruises from his wife after
that justifies him massacring his family?
After the confrontation before Thanksgiving, and that when he went upstairs after the hot tub confrontation, he could hear them belittling him from the window. God. I know, poor man. Claims were also made that he asked Andrew and Candace to leave in order to defuse the situation between he and his wife. But upon arrest, he said to the police the family had ganged up on him and kept threatening him. Yet all three victims were shot in the back. When the police arrived at the scene, Gaddis was sitting on the front porch waiting for them, with one of the two bodies, only which was the boyfriend's, only 3 feet from him. Gaddis pleaded guilty to the 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of felony use of a firearm.
So was he not allowed to have firearms?
No, he was, but he pleaded guilty, so he's not anymore in prison.
What does that mean, felony?
I believe it means because
he killed someone?
I believe he used the I think because he shot so many times, he used the firearm irresponsibly.
I don't know how those things
work. I don't know how that one works, but, he was sentenced to 100 years in prison for each of the 3 counts of murder, with 45 years suspended for each, and an extra 3 years.
Suspended, what does that mean?
I don't know. And 3 years for using a firearm in the killings. These terms must be served concurrently. This means that he has an active sentence of 58 years, which was equal to the age that he was at the time of the crime. And because parole was abolished for felonies in Virginia, good job, Virginia, certain felonies. Gaddis's term is considered a life sentence. Like, right. he's not leaving. Like, he's not even got a chance for parole.
I feel like, though, for the families, it feels better to say, you're serving 100 years for this person, you're serving 100 for this person.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Versus saying, serving life, which is literally, like, exactly. Maybe 10, 15
years.
Well,
and technically, in some states, life doesn't mean life. Like, if someone gives you a life sentence, it's like, there's a cap-off amount of years. And if you live past that, they'll let you out in some states, yes. And I'm sure there's more to it than what I'm saying.
I wonder how many people have been.
But I think Tennessee is one of those, because I believe my father and I have talked about this. But
we should have your dad on. Like, we should do, like, a...
He can't say certain things. I'll ask him, but I remember there are certain things he tells me. He's like, you can't say that. You can't say that. Or, you can't say that's where you got the information
that's true,
from.
Yeah.
So,
which is understandable.
Yeah. Right now, he's actually going... He's off at training right now to be a hostage negotiator, which I think is
pretty cool.
Oh,
that's pretty cool.
I think it's pretty cool.
Maybe he can give me some tips with my children.
That's what I said. I said, Dad, I'm a hostage negotiator. That's basically what a parent is, isn't it?
Honestly. Especially a toddler.
I feel like I'm negotiating my own hostage constantly with Killian.
Yes, yes.
Killian, please. For the love of God, eat this chicken nugget. I'm going to kill him. his stepson, family, and Andrew's family were very happy with the ruling and feel justice has been served. Gaddis and his wife had reconnected at a high school reunion and were married for 10 years before he murdered her on Thanksgiving night. What I left out of this story that makes it a little bit worse, he was a youth pastor. At the very top of this, and I decided to wait until the end to tell you.
Why?
Because I thought it was a good kicker of the story. Christopher Gaddis was a former youth minister director at Grace Lutheran Church in Chester, Virginia. So, he said when they interviewed him, he hopes to minister to fellow inmates to atone for what he did. And I literally wrote, eye roll. But I did want to say this. So, before the murder, so, his claim was that he was being ganged up on, and he was being threatened and all this stuff, and people were like, but what? He made a point to make it very clear that he was being, quote-unquote, threatened. So much so that before the murder, there were a string of strange text messages by Gaddis to those who he would later kill. And here are some of them. At 9:40 p.m., 1.5 hours before the murder, please, please stop threatening me. I'm so scared. Please leave me alone. I am in fear of my life. I feel you want to kill me.
Premeditated murder.
Please let me live. So basically, there are more text messages and I'll read them. I'll read more of them. But what I'm saying is he sent these messages to his, like, wife and his stepdaughter.
And he already knew what was going
to
happen.
Because he knew he was going to kill them. And he was like, I need to make it look
cover
like.
Cover my ass.
Uh-huh. at 9:41 to 9:54. I just want to live, please, please. And stop telling me you want to kill me. Stop scaring me. I'm so afraid. Imagine you were sitting downstairs playing games with your family and you're getting these text messages.
I would immediately leave.
9:58, you're hurting me. 10:10, please don't come in my room to hurt me. 10:27 p.m., please don't come after me. Thanks. I literally typed these text messages exactly how they were written.
Is it thanks, T-H-X?
No, but it's like got no punctuation. It's like, boy, sorry, it says, please don't come after me, ! Thanks.
What?
Yes. 10:30 p.m. Now, remember, this all happened at 11:15 at night.
Right.
10:30 p.m. You want to hurt me? I'm so scared. You and Candy, meaning Candace, want to kill me. This prompted Jeanette to text her nephew at 10:48 saying, he's over the edge. We have left him alone. We'll send you his text. I think he's doing mind games. And at 10:57, the nephew responded, please be careful. I don't know what he's doing, but I think you two should stay somewhere else if you can. Jeanette's phone received a text notice at 11:27, which is like right after her death. Saying that her home security system reported an alarm, but she had already been dead. This makes most believe that he had planned the murders and sent the text to make it appear as he was
makes
fearful
most
for his...
believe? How about it makes everyone?
So he sent those to make people think, oh God, I was so scared. I just defended myself. But I shot all three of them in the fucking back, one of which was literally fleeing from my home.
I don't understand people.
Youth pastor, just... y'all. But yeah, because they were getting...
You know Jesse was
them.
A youth pastor?
I didn't, but I believe that. I believe that. That makes sense to me. But yeah, so it's one of those things. It's like, think about it. On Thanksgiving, we all feel like we're being ganged up on. I sure as shit feel like I'm being ganged up on Thanksgiving.
What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Y'all, if I get sick,
I legit just coughed on your face.
That's
sorry.
She did it in the previous podcast that when she covered her mouth for two coughs and then took her hand away and coughed right in my direction with no coverage whatsoever. Also, you're supposed to do the vampire cough. What are you teaching Killian? Killian probably just coughs in people's faces everywhere.
He does because he's a baby and he doesn't know. I am teaching him to cover his mouth with his hand. But I guess that is wrong.
Got to do the vampire. We had the girls one time, and JC had this really bad allergy cough, and she was coughing like this. And this elderly woman came up to us. She goes, y'all are so awesome for teaching her that cough in her elbow. I was like, okay, it's because she had cancer, and that's what we were taught. You got to cough
in
your elbow.
I like that when JC coughs, though, to do the elbow, she has to take her other hand
and hold it
to pull her whole elbow in front of her face. So it looks like she's, like, struggling. It's so funny. But yeah, no. But people have high emotions on holidays in general, not Thanksgiving only.
I like it. Not high emotions.
Yeah, I love it, guys.
I don't think I've ever had a bad Thanksgiving.
If going and spending time with family on Thanksgiving or any holiday compromises your mental health, don't do it. Don't compromise your mental health for the sake of other people.
Yeah.
Fuck that. If you think staying home alone and eating Thanksgiving dinner or eating Chinese food is what is better for you mentally, then fucking do it and screw everybody. Keep yourself healthy. And because if you're not healthy, you're gonna do stupid shit like this and, like, murder your whole family, and no one wants that. It's only a matter of time before I murder everybody.
Oh, don't fucking say that, because I'll put you in a mental institution tonight.
I won't kill you, but I have a whole list. You're not on it today. Other days, maybe.
I will strangle you for everyone to listen to. And you know I'll do it.
Anyway.
How could you want... I'm so protective over you. How could you want to do that to me?
I don't know.
Do you remember when we talked about Dylan's past? Y'all and Dylan's past? And I was like, you little bitch. I literally didn't talk to him for like a day.
I forgot that you didn't know that. Dylan was an asshole. Oh, he's God. A lovely man now, but he was such an asshole in the beginning.
When she first told me.
He was an 18-year-old boy. What are you going to do?
That's true, but don't give him excuses. Don't give him excuses.
There is no boys will be boys in my family.
Mine either. I don't even
no
have
No such thing. I was going to say, what boys in your house, Jacob?
Can
Jacob
I tell
boys
you?
Boys will be boys.
I won a pendulum reading. It's just,
I know. I'm really excited for
it's
you.
It's just one question, so it's nothing crazy. And I was telling Jacob, I was like, I think, because nothing.
I was
like,
really excited for you.
Nothing really pivotal is happening in my life, so I was like, I want to know. Because I feel like our family isn't complete. So maybe down the road I want to have like two more. But this is like
seven years
or something. This isn't anything that's happening anytime soon. Uterus is closed. But I wanted to ask if our next baby would be a boy. And before anyone jumps on my ass, I would be 100% happy with boy, girl, as long as they were healthy and I
could
carry
the term.
But you
would like a boy.
I would like. I think my husband would.
Because you have two girls.
Exactly. I think my husband would enjoy having a male in the house because... Yeah. We have four animals, and they are all female.
I forgot all three of them.
Yeah, and then me and the girls, and it's only a matter of time before they hit puberty.
And he loves having Killian around, so I do think he would.
Exactly.
I think he would
like,
really like having
him,
a boy.
I see him with Killian, and I literally, like, when he's like, hey, dude, and I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, my God, my uterus just jumped out of my throat. What am I going to do?
And so I, but we couldn't ever, she wanted me to, like, Skype in or whatever. Not Skype in, just, like, Facebook Live. But I literally, our times just don't match. So she said that she'd, like, record it for me. And
oh, cool.
Jacob was like, that's such a stupid thing to ask. You should ask her what the Avalanche are going to do in this next game.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, you
God.
Want me to waste a question?
Did she answer you yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. I'm excited to hear what she says.
I think, well, we did that thing, that test, that ring test.
Did I do it?
I think you did.
Oh.
Mine said boy, which would have meant that we would have
had a miscarriage.
Then it says two girls. Then it says a boy, and then another girl.
That's right. I did do that.
Yeah.
I forgot about it. And I'm very good at that.
What did you do? Do you remember yours?
Mine said, mine literally spins for a boy and stops dead.
Well, Alexis, hers, two girls, and then no more.
Oh.
Heather's,
Dylan
I forget.
Dylan just sent me a picture of them coloring together. Fuck you. That's not funny.
I was knocking.
No, you weren't.
That was a knock.
Fuck you.
Not a knock.
I got chills through my whole fucking body.
I'm gonna shit in a paper bag and give it to
him
for Christmas.
I almost peed on myself. That is not fucking funny.
I'm gonna spit in his food on Thanksgiving.
Well, fuck everything. We're done. Keep it hexy. Bye. I'm angry now. I'm not happy.
Oh, my God.
Hey, everyone. Dylan here. I figured I'd take a moment and do the end card because I kind of messed up the end of this show. If you have a story that you want to share with the girls to possibly read on air, shoot it over to their email at hexymamas@gmail.com. And if you're into social media, go ahead and stalk the girls online. You can find them at Two Hexy Mamas on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And now, I wanted to share with you a promo for an amazing podcast. Listen and enjoy, and keep it hexy.
Hello, I'm Courtney.
And I'm Andre L.
And we're the hosts of Spellcast.
A podcast that seeks to bridge the gap between the mundane and the occult.
Join us every Friday night for a new episode.
We cover everything from candle magic to Kabbalah.
You can follow us at Witchy Page on Instagram and Facebook, and also email us at witchypage@gmail.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
If you really like the show, you can donate on anchor.fm and soon Patreon. All of our supporters get special perks and extra content, so join our coven.
And remember,
there's a little witch in all of us.
And the spirits live in the mirror.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.